Thanks for joining us today at City Life. We believe today's message will empower you and point you towards Jesus. But remember that church is so much more than a message you listen to. It's a living, breathing community that we invite you to be a part of. We hope to see you on a Sunday morning at City Life, in person or online.
We are on our Heart for the House series, and the theme has been gratitude. And there's an interesting fact shared at prayer this morning that I thought was worth repeating that the ladies learned down at the women's conference there this week. And it's interesting. I haven't had a chance to verify if it's true or not, but I don't know if I could. It's in the field of neuroscience, gratitude takes up the same place in your brain as anxiety. So if you have gratitude, you don't have room for anxiety. And if you don't have anxiety, you don't have room for gratitude. But you can choose which one takes that place. And how do you do that? Well, you practice. And you do the thing. Some of you have a gratitude journal. I have a gratitude journal, and I've written like two things in it in 5 years. But I'm really thankful for those two things, let me tell you. But isn't it true? You get our focus becomes on, when our focus gets on what's lacking, what's missing, we start failing to appreciate what we have. And that becomes the negative spiral of death is that there's something powerful about gratitude. And I look back over the years of the church and the Heart for the House, there's things that I'm tremendously grateful for that have taken place in the last 32 plus years that I look at. But there's also there's been some really hard moments too. And what I've noticed is hard moments seem to have a competing edge over good moments. It's something about when you go through hard things or disappointing things, they seem to just, they kick you in the nuts. And it just, I just say stuff like that. I'm sorry. If you're a guest here, this is me. You've met my wife earlier. There's people who are more diplomatic than I am. But that's how hard things feel. And you know, when you get kicked in the nuts, it hurts for a long time. It doesn't just hurt for a short time. It hurts for a long time. And there's a healing process that must take place. Why am I saying this? This has nothing to do with my message whatsoever. And so I want to encourage us today with maybe the scripture. That would be a good place to go after what I just did. And a verse here, Proverbs 13:22. It says this, a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. A good person, everybody say a good person, leaves an inheritance for their children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. Now that second part, that's a whole message by itself, which we won't get into today. But that first part is a part that just, probably because of the stage that I'm at personally in life, it's resonating deeply within me that it's a good person. Now, some of you have a translation would say a good man. But it's not really a man, it's man generic. It's a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. A good person plans for that which they will not see realized. A good person realizes that they play a role in a greater purpose that extends beyond their own life. One of the interesting things that heard a comment from a sociologist that said that when an older generation accumulates but doesn't pass on to the next generation is actually impaired in their ability to succeed. And I'm not going to diss baby boomers at all, but they're saying this is actually very prevalent among baby boomers, that they're hoarding everything for themselves and they're not passing it on to the next generation. And they're actually impairing the ability of the new emerging generation to flourish, because they're keeping all the resources for themselves. And so I'm not here to comment on, I'm just here to say a good person realizes I am setting up the next generation to succeed, or I am setting them up to struggle. And so a good person, the Bible says a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. Now, what's an inheritance? That's a great question, isn't it? Because inheritance, it is money, obviously, because that's kind of like the definition of an inheritance. But there's much greater inheritances that we get from our family, isn't there? Or we fail to get. There's culture. That there's just some families, when you look at them and you just look at those families and you say the culture that they're passing on from generation to generation is healthy. It's the culture is causing the next generation to thrive and to flourish. It's a legacy. A good person is passing on a rich, full inheritance to the next generation. Now, that term, good person, let's stop there for a second, just talk about good person. Because good is kind of a pablum word, isn't it? It's good. How's your pizza? Oh, it's good. Like, you know, like, what am I as a person? Am I pizza or am I nachos? Like, what level of good? And that word, actually, in the Hebrew, that word for good is actually a very strong and powerful word. When God says something is good, he doesn't just mean, the pizza's good. When he says it, it's powerful. It's explosive. It's a rich, it comes from the Hebrew word tov, which is a rich and powerful word we don't have an English equivalent for. And it's not like when we say our pizza is good. It's when God says it, it's not just good, but it's right. And as it was intended from the very beginning, it's filled with purpose and filled with potential. Tov is the word that God used to describe all of creation at the end of each day of creation. When he looked at the sun and the moon and the stars and the seas and the sky, and he said, it's good. It's tov. It's not just like, yeah, good flavor of pizza. It's like, no, this is rich. It's filled with potential. It's filled with the ability to reproduce. When he looked at the animals and the plants, he said it that could bear after their own kind. He said, this is tov. This is good. It's a powerful word. It encompasses kind of multiple aspects of it's something that is a functional goodness, something that is fulfilling its intended purpose. But it's also a word that's filled, it's progressive, where life and potential are embedded and developed. It's a word that means something is filled with divine purpose, where things align with God's plan and God's intention. And has a rich and expansive understanding of goodness, encompassing multiple dimensions and aspects. This word tov is powerful. What does God call good? He calls things good that produce life and contain the potential in them to produce more life. That is good. When he looks at you, you're good. And he looks at you think of a seed. In that seed, there's the potential of an entire orchard. You know, you take a bite of that apple, and you notice sometimes you take a bite of that apple, and there's those little seeds inside. And I've been getting these little apples that the seeds are sprouted when I bite into them. And I just think, you know, that seed has the potential to become an entire orchard that could, you know, if stewarded properly, that apple could feed a nation. And that's what God calls tov. Good. Filled with potential. Filled with purpose. It's interesting when you start reading the Bible, and if you go to one that gives you like the Hebrew words alongside of your English words, and you start reading what God calls tov. It's very interesting. Proverbs 18:22. Here's a good one. A man who finds a wife finds tov and obtains favor from the Lord. Now, some have translated, a man who finds a wife finds a good thing, which I mean, again, a good thing doesn't sound that great, but it's not just a good thing, it's tov. A man who finds a wife finds tov. He finds life and potential. And the first thing is, here's another interesting, the first thing that God declared not tov was when he looked at Adam when Adam was alone. And he said, it is not tov for man to be alone. It is not tov, it is not good for us to be alone. Proverbs 2, this is talking about the importance of getting wisdom in life. It says, Proverbs chapter 2, and I'm going to read a little bit here. It says, my son, if you accept my words and store my commands within you, listening closely to wisdom and directing your heart to understanding. Now this is an appeal from a father to his son to get wisdom and understanding at any cost. Furthermore, if you call out to understand into insight and you lift your voice to understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it, wisdom and understanding like hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores success for the upright. He's a shield to those who live with integrity, so he may guard the paths of justice and protect the way of his faithful followers. And then it goes on to say this, then you will understand righteousness, justice, and integrity, every tov path, every good path. The pursuit of wisdom and understanding leads us. See, when we live as a good person, when I live as a good man, when you live as a good man or a good woman, it causes us to think and see differently. Where we come to realize our decisions aren't really just about us. They're actually about future generations. The decisions we make are shaping the course of our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. Or maybe other people's children and great-grandchildren. When we try to live the life of a tov person or a tov man or woman, it actually shifts the sense of responsibility that it's not all for me and it's not all for now. I actually get to make decisions that sow into future generations by my actions. My efforts, my prayers, and my investments make a difference to those who will follow me, to those a generation I won't actually see. A tov, or a good person, looks at that which has been put in their hand and stops to ask the question, what is the greater purpose for which I've been entrusted with this? We've been entrusted with the future of the church and with the future generation, and a good decision is one that considers its impact generations away. What is the value of the local church to the next generation? I think that years ago there was a statement that came from Willow Creek Church that said that the local church is the hope of the world. And the longer that I am a follower of Jesus, and the longer that I am an inhabitant of current society, the more I have come to believe the local church is actually the hope of the world. The local church is, when you look historically, most of the things that we consider the benefits of our society had their origins in the church, whether it's education, whether it's hospitals, whether it's schools, whether it's even the programs of feeding the poor. These were actually uniquely Christian things that it would, in the essence of early Roman culture in the early church years, it was the fact that it was seen, it actually became the thing that the world around saw how the church treated the people that basically had been discarded from society, and it became such a powerful movement that's where the church's popularity began to rise, is because it lifted the standard of living of those who were basically in despair and hopeless. And I think the same thing today is true. When the church makes decisions that will be, how would I put this? When the church decides to be the church as God designed the church, it creates health in society and health in relationships. And it creates health in families and culture. It creates healthy culture. And people thrive in healthy culture. What's the value of the church to the next generation? It's where they learn what good actually is. Because we live in a world that is arguing over the definition of good. It's actually the very first battle that ever took place was the fall of mankind in the garden was, do we trust what God says is tov, or do we decide for ourselves what is tov? Do we make our own, do we use our own reasoning to decide? We all see where that got us. But that battle never ends. Do we trust what God says is good, or do we decide for ourselves what good is and isn't? When we live tov, or when it comes to heart for the house, it's easy to say, well, we're talking about a building, because that's what today is. It's about giving towards the physical structure of the church. It's about making pledges and commitments for the year ahead, and we do this every year. And you say, well, is a building really the church? It's like, no, we know the building's not a church, but the building makes church happen. And so we're not just focused on a building, but we're actually focused on setting up future generations for success. And in a way, we're taking on difficulties and embracing challenges so that we can create a momentum for future generations. And well, when we give, we enjoy the fruit of our giving. You know, 32 years ago, there was a small handful of people that met in a Kinsman hall. And I think there's maybe two people, three people, four. How many in this room were in the Kinsman hall? I've got two, three. How many? Put them high, I can't see. Three, four, five, six. I'll count myself seven. So seven of us. And 32 years ago. And we just decided to try. And, you know, it was a handful of people at that Kinsman Hall that saw the reality of what we're doing today, or maybe just saw maybe it could possibly happen. We purchased this building 20 years ago, but it remained a furniture store over here for 18 more years. Because we bought a building that we really couldn't afford at the time, but there was rental income that would pay the mortgage. And you know, when you have a plan and it's like, okay, we're going to buy this, but we can't use it for 18 years. Like, you're going to go buy a house, but you can't live in the house for 18 years. It's not super exciting, is it? It's like, you know what? If you pay me some money right now and just keep paying me for 18 years, in 18 years, I'll let you go on a vacation. Just like, I think I'll go camping. Like, why did we do that? We paid the price for a future generation. And why go through that effort? It seems like a lot of work. Well, Monica said it last week, facilities facilitate. And there are simply things we can do with a building that we cannot do without it. And the church is not a building. We know this, but the building makes church possible. In many ways that make us more effective than we are if we don't have a building. The building does play a role in that effectiveness. God does not dwell in a building, but he does stamp his impression on it. My house is not my family, but if you walk into my house, there's a stamp of my family's impression that when you're there, you'll pick up on. My house is not my family, but it facilitates my family, and it facilitates the spirit of my family. And without the house, my family would be hindered. So, while the house is not the church, the building is not the church, it does facilitate the church, and it does have the spirit of the Lord of the church stamped upon it. Something happens when we gather in God's house that's much more substantial than just a personal faith at home. And faith does have to be a personal faith at home to be effective, but it also needs a corporate home where we gather together, where we encourage one another, and where we participate. I can't tell you how many times I've come into the house of God and my life has been heavy with immediate circumstances, and just standing in this place, as maybe it's the music or the prayer or just hearing a message, that it just took my gaze and just lifted it up. That's something that, could I have done that at home? Maybe I could have, but it doesn't seem to happen there very often. It seems to happen here. But I also know that in the house of God, I become aware of problems that I never would have become aware of at home. Like the problems of abandoned children in the dumps of Nairobi. Or children that would grow up as orphans in abject poverty in Rwanda. Or people trapped in the web of human trafficking. Alone, I'd feel bad. But I wouldn't really have any source of involvement. But as a church, we have literally given hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to rescuing people in these situations that you and I can't go rescue them. But because of the church, not just our church, but the greater church that we're connected to, that we're able to, hey, there's people from Red Deer that are going to rescue babies in dumps in Nairobi. We can help them do that. I can't go. I don't even want to go. But I do want someone to go so I can help. And it's like rescuing people from human trafficking. I don't have a clue how to do that. I'd be the person, it's like, maybe we should just go all Rambo and just go shoot everybody. Like, but I don't know how to rescue someone that's caught in human trafficking. I don't have a clue how to do it. But I do believe it needs to be done. So we can partner with organizations like A21 that I don't know how to do it, but I know people who do know how to do it, and we can help them do it. That's because of the church. Okay, moving right along. How important is the church to future generations? Well, I believe that, like I said, I believe the church is, the local church is the hope of the world. It's the hope of the future. I believe that healthy culture and healthy society absolutely is depending on the church to be the church. And not for the church to be the, you know, the Hollywood version of the judgmental, you know, handmade tale church. I'm talking the real church that sees the needs and helps rescue those in need, but also understands that culture is important, and that right and wrong is important. Because if we don't know what right and wrong and truth and lies are. We just end up in this big conglomerate of craziness. The church, we've been given a commission to know what tov is, to know what good is, but also to do good. What do our children learn in church? Our children learn that life is built by what we build, not by what we consume. And consumption or consumerism, I would call it the spiritual cancer of our current culture. That it's like, and how do you know that this is the current culture? It's like, because the average household debt is $21,000 in Canada. It's about double that in the United States. But in Canada, it's about $21,000. It's actually $21,000 per person of household debt that there's no offsetting asset. So in other words, it's something we consumed. We have the debt left over after we consume, but we don't have an asset that represents that debt. So this is not talking about a mortgage on a home, because there's an asset that offsets that mortgage. But this is, consumption is, we've spent the money, it's gone, we still owe the money, but there's nothing left of that money. That's consumption. And it's a lifestyle debt. And you know, that type of consumption, it actually controls our future. We begin to make decisions. When you get heavily into debt, your decisions become decisions not doing what the will of God is, but your decisions actually become, how do I pay my debts? It's oppressive. I believe it's actually why the Bible forbids excessive interest being charged on the citizens of a nation, is because it just actually destroys the nation. We teach our kids in church that life is not made up. Your life does not consist of the abundance of things. If we pass on an inheritance to the next generation, we're actually freeing the next generation to serve God. All right. I am running out of time. So let me talk about Heart for the House. Heart for the House, the pledge, the giving, it's not just about us having things. It's actually about legacy. It's about setting up future generations to succeed where we aren't able to succeed, or where I'm going to run out of track here one of these days. Like, my journey is going to end before I can get done everything that I thought I could get done. But there's a generation emerging that I want to set up. We've gone from a Kinsman Hall to what we have today in 32 years. But what can the next generation do with this in 30 years? What can the next generation do? If we just set them, if we just get them started, not out of a place of lack, but out of a place of provision. Heart for the House is about stewarding the building we have right now. We do have to do things in our building, like replace roofs, as exciting as that is to hear. They have to be done. But it's also about setting up the future generations for success. It's about legacy. It's about leaving an inheritance. It's about being a tov person that leaves an inheritance for our children's children. And it's not about just getting and consuming all we can, but it's about playing a greater role in seeing God's kingdom come to earth. And so for this year, our Heart for the House, our Heart for the House pledges and offering for this year, we're going to be applying it 100% to our mortgage, which is coming up for renewal. This is all exciting, isn't it? Oh, a mortgage. But why would we do that? Well, one, because the less interest that we have to pay, it's the more provision there is for the future of the church that isn't just going to the bank. But, and just to give you, it, we did put out in May, and there was a letter that went out this week that has a link to our legacy report. If you want to know more about the finances and the like, kind of the where the church is at, we put out a legacy report back in May that you can just click on the link that was in that letter and you can read that report. But just to give you a summary, we owe about $1.7 million on this property, you know, 1.7-ish. And at the time of completion, this property was appraised at about $5.8 million at the end. It's not bad for a building we bought for $1.2 million. And because there's also something that happens when you own something that's real. You know, you go buy a dress, in the end you have a debt, and a few years later, you've probably got rid of the dress. But when you buy land, when you buy substance, this isn't just for us, this continues on, but it also increases. And so this year will be, I think Siri was talking to me there. This year we will be applying 100%. And so if you make a pledge now, but you do like a monthly, if you're like me, I just make it a part of my regular monthly bills. And I just have it set up to just continually come out of my account at the beginning of every month. We will factor in the full year's pledges and the full year's giving. Our mortgage comes up for renewal at the beginning of the new year here. I think it is in January or February or somewhere in there. And we'll just figure out what that number is for all the pledges, and we'll put that full amount towards the mortgage, towards paying that down, and then also that increasing interest rate won't be such a burden, because we all know what happened to interest in the last few years. We got such a good rate to start, but you know what? God has a way. There's always a way. And so, and I just want to, you know, just take a moment of gratitude to those who have given. I have given now to the Heart for the House. I don't even know the number, but it's got to be close to 28 or 29 years that I have just set up monthly giving, and since we started doing it. And I want to thank those, because there's people in this room that you have given for decades. And we're, you know, the church, the building is nice, but what happens in the building is better. And what happens, and you know, our life is not just about getting what's in it for me. It's also about what can I pass on to those around me? What role can I play? And we look at the overwhelming problems of society. Well, you know, it's like eating an elephant. It's one bite at a time. I've never tasted elephant, but it would be one bite at a time. And through that, great achievements can be done. Let's stand to our feet. And you know, I don't want you to stand here and think, you know, the church, it's just asking for your money. No, it's actually, what I would say is, if your passion is to see the church great in our generation, then I'm telling you, we actually do need money to do that. Like, organizations don't just exist because of good wishes and unicorn dreams. It just doesn't happen. It happens because of commitment, because of dedication. And for some, you're here and you're thinking, I don't know what I can do. Well, you can serve, because the church does need servants too. Because if we don't have servants, nothing great happens here. But more than that, I just want to say, you know, you were put on this earth at this time, and I know it sounds colloquial, but you were put here for a reason. At the beginning of time, God planned for you to be here now in this age, which is a really interesting age to exist in. Like, we're the first generation that has seen technology. Really, we're the first generation. Like, talk about a cool time to be alive. And God, at the beginning of creation, looked at your life and said, right here, in this time, this is where they need to be. And I just want to just declare over you, you're not here at an accident. Your life is not no matter what you feel like, or whether you're at the top of the world, or whether you're feeling frustrated, you're here because God chose for you to be here at this time, and there is a purpose for you to be here. And sometimes your struggle is actually pointing you towards your purpose. The things you struggle with the most in life tend to be the areas where God wants to move the greatest, because His strength is made perfect in our weakness. So where we struggle is where He wants to show His strength. So let's just take a moment. Let's just close our eyes. And just pray to ourselves, or just pray along with me. Lord, would You show me my purpose? Would You reveal to me the role that You have that's greater than just my life, but the role that You have for me and my generation, for my family in this generation, for my friendships, my circle of influence, why You have placed me at this time in history. It's not an accident. Father, I just pray for everyone here that futility that the enemy tries to sow into our thinking, it's like, you don't matter, your life doesn't matter, that Father, You don't make things that don't matter. You place tremendous potential. One apple seed doesn't look like it matters, yet it has the potential to feed a nation. And You've planted seeds in the hearts of people here. Some of these seeds we've just looked at and said, they don't matter, but they do matter, because within them is Your goodness, Your potential for life, for the future, and to help be a part of seeing Your kingdom come and Your will be done on earth in our generation as it is in heaven. So I'm going to lead us in a prayer. It's just a prayer saying yes to following Christ, a prayer saying yes to following His plan and His purpose. And if you're here and you want to be included in that prayer, you can just pray with me. Jesus, I say yes to You. I want to follow You. I want to follow Your plan and Your purpose for my life. Would You reveal that plan to me? Reveal to me where I have believed lies about myself, and show me the truth about how You have created me, and it's good. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope today's message encouraged you. If you want to take your next step in saying yes to Jesus, you can always contact us at cty.lc/next-step or fill out the Next Step section on the City Life app. It's an honor to play a small part in what God is doing in your life. We look forward to connecting with you soon.